The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. We are going to be doing our clown takes format tonight. We have a very nice target. I think this is going to be a fun episode, clowning a former co-host of the podcast, so we'll see how that goes. I am Terry Cushman, coming to you from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, originally from Windham, Maine. We've got Nick Diamond from Broward County, Florida, and Steve McGreevy from the state of Massachusetts, originally from the town that I'm in right now. We didn't really get into that in the last episode, but
yeah, hail from Conway originally.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love it here. I spent my whole life trying to get here, and your life has had some adventure, you know, but
yeah, it's not a bad place to be. I enjoy living in Massachusetts now. I'm now currently just north of the city. I had to kind of keep scaling my way out there until I could find a house that I could afford to buy, but that's Massachusetts for you. So
yeah, absolutely. But you're the closest to the Holy Ground, so.
Yeah, and I do get to about 10 to 15 games a year and all that other bit. So, I might be the man on the ground with the, you know, closest to the park kind of thing. But it doesn't distract away from the takes that you guys give.
Where's your favorite place to sit at Fenway? I have a very specific place I like to sit.
Me personally, my favorite spot is right beside the home team dugout. Okay. Because the first couple rows are pretty much taken up by like season ticket holders, so when I come swooping in or whatever, like I get like right there at that corner.
Okay.
So like I can still like lean over and yell at them in the dugout, and then I can still have a good view of the game. My second favorite spot, right by the pesky bowl.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, just because you get to see the bowl like as it's coming through, and like you just have free reign. You bring a Sharpie, you can write whatever you want on that thing. It's fantastic.
And now
that I've brought my kiddo and 5-year-old kiddo along a couple times or whatever, her favorite spot is the pesky pole or the chicken nugget stand. That's one of those two.
I think that's universal. Unless you're a vegan, I mean, you're gonna love the chicken nugget stand. But Nick, where's your spot?
Mine's actually very, very similar. When he said the pesky pole, mine is very specifically a little bit more into fair territory than what he said. Home run territory, where it kind of juts out to about like 380, first row, where it's like the 3-foot wall. You have to be in first row. You're on the field. Those are my favorite seats in all sports. You have to be home run territory, though. You have to be in the first row, and you have to be on that field, basically.
Oh yeah, that's spot on, brother.
So mine is a lot different than very affordable, though. I like sitting up in the Coke seats on the second deck. And
dude, I get like mad anxiety up there. I've sat up there twice and like I can't do it.
It's steep. I have heard a friend of mine, his name's Andy, his son just can't sit up there. It's just too high, too steep. But I kind of like the elevated view. The only thing you can't see is if they rip a ball down that left field line once that wall jets upwards. You just have to go by the crowd reaction on what's going on down there.
The cool thing about sitting up at where the Coke sign is the camera is right by your face.
there
so
is
when
one,
Raffy does his inevitable, I'm trying to knock a homer, he always knocks it towards the Coke sign. So you got a good chance of catching a foul ball and getting like some camera spot on Nesson.
Yeah. And if you guys ever knew me personally off the podcast, I've got tons of quirks. I like things to be a certain way. And one of the nice things about the Coke section is it's at the end of the line on that upper deck. So the concession stand never really a line. The bathrooms, you basically have your own bathroom. There's not a line there. So there's some perks to sitting up there, and it is kind of a cool view. I have a picture I can show you guys. I think it was one of the last games I went to, probably the last game I went to when before I moved. The Yankees won that night. This is late 2021. And the Red Sox led the game and led it. And Nick Pivetta surprisingly pitched a very good game against the Yankees. He gets taken out. Cora goes to Darwin's and Hernandez, who had no command whatsoever. And then Stanton crushes him for a grand slam. And then we all had to sing Sweet Caroline. So
I was at that game. I was actually sitting next to the Yankees bullpen.
Okay.
In right field, I had gotten like these weird promo tickets. So they were like way out nowhere. No, I was at that game. I remember it painfully.
So Charlie's referenced it a million times on the podcast, but I was with him the night before Cole versus Evaldi, and Evaldi gets lit up. And ironically, a couple weeks later, if even that rematch in the one game wild card, it was Evaldi versus Cole, and Evaldi pitched very well that night. So I'm glad it worked.
Yeah, and that bit, like, I was actually like, I had like the Red Sox Nation thing so I could get in to see BP.
Okay.
And they weren't doing BP, but you could like run up next to the bullpens or whatever, and you could see the pitchers like kind of getting their shit together.
Okay.
Damn it. That's three. Charlie, are you three?
Two for two for the swear jar with you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know. I
dropped an F-bomb like five or six shows ago, but it was like in the last 2 minutes. So I say no foul.
Yes, it is. Sorry, Charlie. Sorry, Charlie.
That's okay.
But yeah, watching him like work on that, because that was the game after he had gotten called out for balking when he had switched to like a full like stretch pitch,
okay,
to like a windup, like, or actually it was a reverse. He had switched from a windup to a stretch, and he got called on a balk. And like they weren't doing BP, but like at that game, like I went down and just sat like right there at the outfield bit and watched Nicky P, and all he was doing was checking his footing.
Okay.
Like he was just working on all that bit. Like he is dedicated. That's why I am fully behind this guy, because when he's on, he's on. And he believes in the Sox. So, and that all came from that experience of me going to Fenway and checking that out and seeing him do his thing. It's like, this guy actually cares, man. Like he ain't phoning it in. Like he really, really wants to do this. Like he wants to win it. He wants to be the guy.
He's a bit of a head case though, because that was essentially his first full season anyway. And for some reason, he can't wear long sleeves under his uniform because he was tipping. And he had a problem with that in Philly, apparently. And then he gets shelled one night pitching for the Red Sox. And then in between innings, he took it off and just went out in his regular T-shirt. So,
and then he wasn't tipping? I've never heard about long sleeve tipping Pivetta.
I don't know.
Do tell.
There was something about it. We'll have to look it up. But I just, for some reason, he won't wear long sleeves. But anyway, we'll get to the format here. It is Clown Takes, and the star of this week's Clown Takes is going to be Andrew Dwan. And if you're a longtime listener to the podcast, he was with us about 3 years, I would say, and he was like the resident homer, a hardcore, diehard Heim Bloom guy, would defend Bloom to the nines on everything. And we've clowned him one other time. It wasn't a pleasant experience, you know, with Andrew on the crew towards the end anyway. Just a lot of fighting behind the scenes. He wasn't really on, he wasn't on speaking terms with Charlie for much of his time.
Charlie's such a great guy, though. Yeah. Like, who can hate Charlie?
Well, Andrew did. Andrew didn't get along with Nick Face. I was clashing pretty frequently with him. So Andrew, you know.
Well, I mean, if you and Chilling can get along, I mean, I think anybody can get along. So,
yeah, Jeremy and I, we've had an interesting relationship, but I'm glad he's back. And, you know, he's been a pretty strong contributor this season. But so we'll get to Andrew's hot take here. So it's two takes. He had to do some clarification in a second take, which we'll get to shortly. But this is gonna just underscore how brutal of a Bloom guy Andrew was, and even in hindsight, can't see the failures of what resulted in that. You know, with all the aftermath. But this is what Andrew says. He tweets, Alex Cora's greatest personal accomplishment was convincing Red Sox ownership that everything was Chaim Bloom's fault. So, kind of a stunning tweet there. The fact we have no pitching right now, the fact we're DFAing guys like Brad Keller, we're bringing in guys like Bailey Horn, we had to bring back 44-year-old Rich Hill to pitch the final month of the season.
Name 1 year that the Red Sox had good pitching.
None of them.
Without going back to 2018 2013
The first half of 2021, we were okay. We were okay pitching, and
that's not good pitching though.
We had the second best team and best record in baseball in the month of June, but that's as close as you can get, and it went downhill pretty quickly. So, but all those guys I named this year, Keller, Horn, Rich Hill, these are all consequences of Chaim Bloom doing nothing for our pitching program. So we'll kick it over to Nick. What are your thoughts on the clown take?
I just don't get how you can sit here and defend Bloom after he's been fired. Like, he was fired. Like, why are you still defending him? Now with Breslow coming in, kind of doing the same exact thing over and over again, you might be able to forgive Bloom a little bit. But he still went over the luxury tax for no reason. He still signed Trevor Story and then lied about him replacing Xander Bogaerts to the entire fan base. I know that was also ownership too, but Bloom did go out there. And as soon as that happened, I knew it was Xander Bogaerts replacement, and they refused to say that. How can you shit on? Oh, sorry. I guess I did it too. How can you sit here and talk bad about Cora when he wins a World Series in his first year? I know. And then you look at the two rosters and you have one of the best rosters of all time. And you have a bunch of minor leaguers on this team.
What year was that? 18. What year was that?
18 won the World Series. Yes.
Right. So what was the year that he got like hemmed up?
Oh, if 17. I don't care at that point.
I'm just providing context.
Yeah, I mean, he won a World Series. He had one of the greatest teams of all time, but his GM at the time provided him a good roster, a very good roster to play with. Right now, he doesn't have the talent to go out there and win a World Series. And trying to say that everything Chaim Bloom did wrong is Alex Cora's fault is just stupid. And I think he's getting the hate he kind of deserves out there for that take. And I think Terry said he doubled down on it. I think he put out like 4 tweets trying to clarify himself that like, oh, Cora's still a decent manager. And I didn't mean that. And yeah, you did.
Yeah. Andrew loves to roast people. His entire account is him lashing out at people he can't stand. And quite frankly, it's people that are really just talking about the core of our problems and why we're never a playoff team, and Andrew can't handle it. But Steve, go ahead. What's your What's your take on?
It's funny you said the core of our problems. No, I've been railing on him pretty hard the past, you know, couple recordings or whatever. I don't like how Cora manages this team, and I think that Cora has too much sway in how the rest of the front office is doing, and then the front office doesn't want to take accountability for what they're doing themselves. So it just kind of feels like a game of pass the buck, where Cora is ultimately walking home with a bag, and nobody still knows what the hell they're doing with their team. So as far as the clown take, though, no, I don't say it's 100% on Cora. I say it's like 50% on Cora. Like, it's what he's being dealt with. And it's also, I think he's manipulating situations to, like, force the front office to give him more power, more situations to control whatever he needs to do. And if we take a look at how he's managed the bullpen, that's great. And how you manage the positional players, not so good. So does he really need to be in that kind of position? Not sure. But I am convinced that Cora is setting himself up to be that person and make anyone around him fail that doesn't agree to that.
See, I'm not like a hardcore Cora guy, but we're not where we're at right now. We're well under 500 if it's not for Alex Cora's leadership this year. I mean, Jaron Duran just doesn't have this monster season with another manager in the dugout. David Hamilton doesn't have the, you know, the breakout that he's had without Alex Cora. And I think Cora's done a pretty good job kind of keeping Devers in line. I mean, you've seen the defensive numbers somewhat solid for what his normal metrics are. I mean, is Devers an average defender? No, but he has put together a good season. And I think it's because of Alex Cora that we're in this hunt. And I think Alex Cora gets the most credit in 2021 for getting that team into the postseason. I don't give Bloom any credit for 2021. Kike Hernandez went off in the postseason. That was a Bloom guy. Alex Verdugo.
It was also a Cora guy, too. Cora and Kike were, you know,
yeah,
attached at the hip.
I think Alex and Kike were really tight, but if it weren't for Alex Cora, I think the Bloom era would have been a massive failure. So the fact that Andrew wants to put it on Cora is just insane to me. I think Bloom gets fired 1 year earlier if we don't make the postseason in 2021. So it's just, I'll never understand the obsession with Bloom and the fact that they couldn't come to terms with it. Look what Dombrowski's doing. He's just phenomenal. He is a god in Philadelphia.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's running Philly like he ran the 2018 Sox. So
I think he's been smarter this time. He's been smarter with his, you know, he's gotten the home. Well, I shouldn't say homegrown guys, but he's gotten his tenured pitchers to take extensions, you know, Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola. And those guys made way more sense than Chris Sale did, by the way. I mean, there was no red flags with Nola and Wheeler. They've also developed Ranger Suarez into a very strong, I would say at least middle of the rotation pitcher. Dombrowski's had
four guy most, right?
He's had decent bullpens there in Philly. The only contract I don't really love that Dombrowski has done is the Trey Turner deal. I just think that's going to age poorly after a few years
Taiwan Walker just got demoted to the bullpen. He gave him $80 million.
That wasn't great. That was bad one. You're right. That was a bad one.
That's a Dombrowski move.
But I just think all in all, there's not a lot of painful things. The Schwarber and the Castellanos contracts were perfect. They weren't super long. They were sustainable. If you wanted to trade Kyle Schwarber this winter, you could probably do it. I think he's got 1 year left on the deal. They're not going to, but it's such a good contract that you can actually move him. And I think the same could be said for Castellanos. I think somebody would at least take on the contract and give you, you know, maybe a mid-level prospect back at least. So there's just tons of failures. I mean, Garrett Richards was one of the 2021 signings. He's no longer in Major League Baseball. His career was done. That, you know, basically within a year, same as Corey Kluber, retired from baseball, never pitched again after that season with the Red Sox. So
I think he's still actually listed as a free agent.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if he's not with a team, he would be. But
I mean, you know where I'm going with that. Anyways.
And then just look at the farm system. There's no pitching in it. The one guy that might have been worth something, Luis Perales, had Tommy John. So we're not gonna see him until the year after next at the earliest, and maybe even longer because he'll have to go back to Worcester. Marcelo Meyer, the fourth overall pick in 2021, hard to not be concerned about his future with the fact that he can't even finish a minor league season. So I think this Red Sox farm system, a little bit overrated. Is it a top five farm system? I don't think so. It's probably in the lower top 10, but still, it's got no pitching. We've got unsustainable deals on the team right now that Bloom signed. The Yoshida contract is kind of redeeming itself in a way. He's still a platoon DH guy, though, at the end of the day. Trevor Story is going to be painful until we Pablo Sandoval him or the 3 years runs up. There's not many good things I can say about Chaim Bloom. And if I'm another fan base, I would want no part of him being my top executive in that front office. The dude lacks confidence in his own performance. And it's just, I would never die on a hill trying to defend him. And I certainly wouldn't be throwing a top five MLB manager under the bus in order to, you know, try to save face. Any thoughts, Nick?
Yeah. You brought up a while ago about 2021. I think 2021 is the biggest reason why all these Bloom lovers are out there. Like, that's what the Bloominati was born from, that overachieving season. And they all thought Trevor Story was going to take this team to the World Series. And they thought, oh my God, he's rebuilding the farm system because he lucked into Marcelo Meyer. No, he lucked into Marcelo Meyer because we had a 60-game season in 2020 and stunk. We were one of the worst teams of all time, kind of, you know?
That was the worst.
Winning percentage-wise. Like, 2020 is just, I barely, you know, you stuck it on and you walked away because you're down by 8 runs in the first inning at that point. But 2020 in Chaim Bloom, he got lucky and he still didn't really produce anything. One wild card finish that they overachieved, who a lot of that roster was Xander Bogaerts, Nathan Eovaldi, JD Martinez, built by Dave Dombrowski. You know, I haven't been really, I kind of want to give Breslow one more offseason before I like crap on him, you know. But the one thing I did like when he first came in was instantly get rid of all of Bloom's mistakes and Alex Verdugo. And then he instantly shipped out Nick Robertson to the Cardinals, who Bloom acquired. So that I did like that he kind of shipped out Bloom's mistakes. But you can't ship out Trevor Story. Nobody wants him.
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point here. How many of the Bloom guys are praising Dombrowski this year for giving you your three best starting pitchers, Bayo, Crawford, and Houck? None of them. Yeah, we're they're not going to
starting shortstop/center fielder.
Yeah, I mean,
Or catcher, second baseman.
Rafaela. Well, Wong's a Bloom guy, but Rafael and Duran, both Dombrowski guys. That's absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. Casas, too.
Casas, yeah. What? So I don't, it's just, it's insane to me. And here's another thing. In three out of those 4 years, we had a bottom 5 or 10 bullpen and a bottom 5 or 10 rotation. None of them outside of 2021 got above 20th. And most of the time they were bottom five, actually. And Bloom came from a pitching factory. A pitching factory. And we never had good pitching. And in 2021, Richards and Perez, his two key guys for the rotation, weren't even in the rotation for the postseason. I don't think Richards even made the playoff roster because I think he got hurt. Maybe he was on the ALDS roster, but nonetheless, not a factor. And Perez was just used in mop-up duty, basically. So how do you come from Tampa and then bring in the worst pitching imaginable and then not even develop pitching? Like, that's the most anti-Tampa performance from an executive I've ever seen.
When he got fleeced by his old organization for Jeffrey Springs, I think he was scared to deal with pitching ever again.
That's a great point. Yeah. We got, let's see, we gave up Springs and Chris Mazza for that catcher
never did anything.
Never will see the light of day. And then we did get Sogard in that deal, so maybe that can save it a little bit. But yeah, man, when that was the ultimate indictment. And then Ryan Brazier goes from the Red Sox to the Dodgers, has a Koji Uehara type second half for that team, an ERA well under one. And all the Dodgers did with him was they said, dude, just throw a cutter. Throw a cutter, you'll be amazing. And that's all it was. That was the tweak. And all the trash we acquire, they end up retiring within a year. All the trash we send away, they end up thriving eventually. And Heim Bloom is probably one of the worst executives of my lifetime, for sure. And I mean, he's with the Cardinals now. I don't know where he ranks in that front office. I don't think it's very high. He's kind of a consultant. And if I'm not mistaken, he still does live in New England and he kind of works for them remotely. So I guess I wouldn't be totally shocked if he does get a job with a smaller market, but he's never going to lead a team to the promised land.
I think Mozeliak, that's the Cardinals GM, yep, said he was going to retire once his contract was out. So maybe there is an opportunity for Bloom in St. Louis. I don't know. I was surprised the Marlins didn't even interview him when they were going through their process.
Well, they tried, I think, and Bloom shot it down is what happened.
I'm surprised he did that. But
yeah, I don't know. I mean, Miami isn't a dream spot. And then even the manager was like, I want out. Don't even take my option. But I just... All Bloom has right now is Kyle Teal and Roman Anthony.
Anthony's the one that he got. He went out and he got him in the supplemental round.
Yeah.
He was like the 34th overall pick. Kyle Teal fell. Marcelo Meyer fell. And there's nothing you can really say about that. I mean, they lucked into those two picks. Kyle Teal could have went 7th, 6th. Marcel Meyer was supposed to go 1.
And then apparently 3 executives were smarter than Bloom and didn't take him. Wasn't Henry Davis the first overall?
Henry Davis went one, but there were shortstops that went after him who have made the majors. It was like the dude who I can't think of his name right now.
Zach Nito,
who was, I was going to say second, but the guy in the Diamondbacks, not Perdomo, but the other guy, he only played like 10 games in the majors. He was drafted a few picks after him. I'll look him up.
Yeah. So you can't say, I mean, Henry Davis, obviously, I mean, he's been bouncing around. He's an outfielder now. Has spent
Jordan Lawler, who's who I was thinking about.
Okay.
Lawler, yeah. He's made the majors. I think he got hurt, and then Perdomo went back in at shortstop, and he was drafted after Meyer, and he's already made his major league debut. So there's a shortstop that they could have taken before him. He hasn't had much success in the majors, but he's made it to the majors at least.
Right. Yeah. So to me, I mean, if Meyer comes up and then has a good run of health, okay, fine. But right now, I mean, he's the guy I would trade in a heartbeat if a team would be dumb enough to take him. Like, if you need to move one of your big three, he's the guy. And you got that Christian Campbell guy that's emerging. I think he's a righty, so he should be viewed as pretty valuable. And then you had that Miguel Blaise kid coming back from a shoulder thing. He's a righty. But I just don't. His legacy in Boston will always be a massive failure. Sam Kennedy's pretty dumb. And if Sam Kennedy thinks another guy's dumb, what does that say? What does that say?
Exactly. I can't listen to these people defend Bloom when he was literally fired. Like, fired before the season was over. They couldn't let him finish the season. That's what they thought about him.
Yeah. And another thing from the Bloominati, and Andrew is definitely guilty of this. One of their traits was they would praise a guy like Hunter Renfroe for the acquisition. And I hated that acquisition at first, and he kind of became one of my favorite players on that team. But then the next season, Bloom would deal him or not bring him back. Michael Wacha would be another good example of this. And the Bloominati would just destroy those players the year after they left to try to justify the fact that Bloom traded him. Well, now, as fate would have it, Renfroe and Wacha are probably...
Schwarber's another one.
Schwarber, another one. Yeah, absolutely. All of those guys are going to be featured in the postseason this year. And I don't know who's going to win the World Series. I still think the Phillies are probably the favorite, but who thought the Royals was going to go to back-to-back World Series and win one of them? If they're the team that gets hot, they could do it. I have no idea who's going to win this World Series this year. Maybe the Padres finally do it, but it's going to be a fascinating month, and there's going to be some guys that Bloom passed on that are going to probably go fairly deep into the month.
Actually, since you brought about the Royals, something that just popped up that I remember from this offseason, this is so random. During this offseason, there was this kid in my like DMs. I don't know. He was probably like 18. He was telling me, he's like, dude, the Royals are going to have a massive offseason. I was kind of like, yeah, all right, whatever. And he's like, yeah, they're going to win 95 games next year. And I'm like, yeah, all right, whatever. And look what they're doing. So that kid, whoever the heck he was, I don't even know what his at was, but he was in my DMs blowing me up, telling me how good the Royals were going to be, and he was right. So
I actually took them to win the division, and I don't remember, at least at the beginning of the winter, thinking they were going to make some splashes, but they signed Seth Lugo early enough. So that was a good indicator. Okay, all right, well, maybe they are going to do something here. And, you know, Renfroe, kind of a complimentary guy, wasn't a big signing. And I always liked Wacha for some reason.
And they gave Bobby Witt $300 million.
And that, yes. So
they went out and they stepped up. Like, they might be here to throw some money around.
Where did Dayton Moore go?
At least as long as his contract runs out.
I don't know. Did Dayton Moore leave?
I thought he did.
I can look it up really quickly.
Yeah, he's with the Rangers now. Senior advisor of baseball operations. The only reason it popped into my head was, you know, he could be a guy that could potentially do something in a big market without being, you know, having those small market handcuffs on him. You know, 57 years old, not super old. I just wonder, you know, could, I don't know if the Red Sox would be smart enough to make a phone call, to a guy like him, but, you know, it's better than what we have. And, you know, they've brought up some guys and he built that World Series team in 2015. So I don't know, but anybody is better than Bloom. What about Sherrington versus Bloom? I know I asked you guys this during your interview thing, but in my mind, Ben Sherrington, far and away a better executive than Chaim Bloom. They'll point to his drafts, and there were some bad drafts in the Sherrington era, but he really...
Both of them are castrated. They're absolutely, like, muted from any abilities that they can do. It doesn't matter what, like, the Craig Breslow folks and the Craig Sox or the Bloom Fields or whatever you guys want to call them or whatever. Like, they are hamstrung by corporate crap above them, preventing them from doing what they want to do, regardless of what they have plans for. So they're all set up as patsies.
Well,
the only person coming out on this on the good end is the manager who just took his bag.
If we're talking about the Sherrington versus Bloom debate, it's not even close. One has a World Series ring and one doesn't. Like, there's not a debate if you have a ring. You know, it might have been a fluky World Series in 2013.
I don't think it was. He did a very good job bringing in some veteran guys, some proven guys, some guys that weren't even completely washed or semi-washed even, and he did very well addressing the major league roster, I felt like.
Yeah. It's still Sherrington by a million miles to me.
Yeah.
And that,
I mean,
you could talk about his drafts and stuff, but whatever. He won a ring. Who cares?
And almost
if Bloom won in 2021, I might be saying the same thing. Like, I might be picking Bloom. I don't know. But right now that he won it, Sherrington.
Yeah, I just feel like, you know, bringing in Napoli, Victorino, Johnny Gomes, all critical signings, smart signings. We didn't even overpay. The Koji Uehara acquisition. I remember seeing his numbers that year. I mean, he finished out with Texas pretty good, if I remember well. And I thought, man, this could be something. But before you even got to Uehara, you had that Joel Hanrahan guy. You had
Andrew Bailey.
Andrew Bailey himself. Yeah. Andrew Miller was in that bullpen until he broke his ankle. Tozawa got some looks at closer. He was a very good reliever that year in the eighth inning anyway. And Breslow was a part of that team. He was your best lefty, really. But I just think it's Sherrington by a mile, despite the drafts. Despite the fact people knock on Sherrington, he was the farm director when Mookie was drafted, when Xander was signed, you know, as an international free agent, when Bradley was brought in. Not that I'm a big Bradley guy, but you can't say Bradley was a complete bust. Jason might say that, but I won't. But I thought the farm was okay while Sherrington was the director of it. It's just while he became a GM, we had like three bad years in a row where we just didn't draft anyone. Not knowing that, you know, stuck it out and ended up making their major league debut. But it's like, I don't know. You gotta be pretty deranged to think Bloom was a critical guy here. Let me ask you this. who would Bloom have brought in? What would the offseason have looked like? I mean, he's not signing Aaron Nola. Not that anyone really had a shot at him, but I don't think he makes a move. I think we would have got Giolito anyway, because apparently they were doing tons of due diligence on him the summer before he got fired.
I'll tell you what he would not have done. He would not have traded Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom.
He doesn't want to trade anybody of value, though. So, yeah, we got stuck with that, too. And then, but then Chris Sale would have, like, fallen off his bike getting a baguette, and he would be on the injured list right now if he was stuck with us. So,
would Sedane Rafaela and Brian Bayo been extended? Absolutely not. I don't think Bloom would have done that. I don't know if you look at those as good moves at the moment. I don't know yet. It's too early to tell, but...
Yeah, I view the Rafaela one as good. I did finally express just last week some reservation that maybe we jumped the gun on Bayo. It's not a ton of money, and I conceded that, but right now that one's not looking like a slam dunk. But yeah.
I mean, his last performance was pretty nice for that, but
I do think the players didn't like Bloom either. I don't know that for sure, but that's what I, you know, gathered from just watching the players and kind of how everyone spoke about Bloom and how other executives talked about Bloom. They didn't seem to like him either. I guess the players might like Breslow more because he actually was a player, but we have yet to really hear any other feedback from other executives about Breslow. So I'm kind of interested to hear about that in the offseason, if they open up about him. Like they did about Bloom.
Yeah, that's interesting because I just can't imagine there's executives out there praising Breslow, thinking, oh, he's done such a great job. Like the farm system is ranked a little bit lower this year than where we were at, so we've slipped some, and still no pitching. The deadline was a bust. He's probably going to get another winter at it, and maybe he'll be able to flip the narrative, but I think it's a long shot, but we'll see. And
I think all he's really got to do is show that he'll trade one of these prospects to go get a starter, because obviously they're not giving him $250+ million to go sign a starter. So he has to show that he knows what he's doing and has to go get somebody, which I don't think will happen.
But yeah. One guy I really wanted last winter, and I know Charlie was against it. I don't remember where Jason stood, but I was a Seth Lugo guy. I thought that would have been a quality addition. He got a 3-year deal and was pretty healthy last year. I think he had bone chips in his elbow, similar to Evaldi in 2019, and they had to do a procedure on him. But there were some underlying metrics that suggested maybe Fenway wasn't a good park for him, and We actually did tune him up twice, but he's pitched pretty well against everyone else. I would have made a play on him, and I
like Seth Lugo a lot. Sonny Gray was also another one I liked too. He is older, but I thought you could have got him for two, 3 years if you really needed.
Yeah, that was another one I was fairly high on as well, and people cited, you know, he doesn't have great numbers at Fenway, but those are old, and he's really transformed a lot in the last 5 or 6 years, ever since he left New York. It seemed like when he pitched for Cincinnati, that was kind of a turning point for him, and he's been a, you know, a top 10 or 12 pitcher in the league ever since.
He kind of reminds me of like how AJ Burnett kind of faltered in New York too.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar stuff, I would say, at least when they were in their primes. But yeah.
And Burnett went back to, I think it was Pittsburgh
and thrived.
Had a pretty good few years there. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I think we're probably still, you know, where we are or significantly worse. If Bloom stuck around for another year, we wouldn't have been a playoff team. I can assure you that. And I don't know. It's hilarious that those people just aren't over it. They just can't cope with the fact that he got bounced. Any final thoughts? No? All right. Well, we will wrap on that. Do we remember who we have? Who does the midweek have next week? I already forgot. Oh, the Mets. That's going to be the Mets.
The Mets series. And then the White Sox, I think, after that.
Yeah. So the midweek will be covering the Mets series, which is going to be very interesting, I feel like. I don't know what the matchups will look like, but that's a team that's exceeded expectations big time this year. And
that's what happens when you throw money at it.
Yeah.
And yeah, they're probably going to sign Juan Soto.
They could. Yeah. Absolutely. They could.
I'd put my money on it.
And they have a better record than the Red Sox somehow.
Yeah.
That's not really hard to do.
I never realized that the Mets somehow had a better record than the Red Sox.
Well, I know they've had a good last 4 weeks or so. Are they in a wild card spot or not?
No, they're not, but they're the first team out.
Okay.
Kind of like what, same exact position we are in. So they're must win games just as much as the Sox are in.
And, you know, I'm wondering with that Austin Riley injury, if that's the final nail in the Braves coffin, because they're falling bad and I think they could just fall out of it. Even if the Mets aren't super stellar, I think they could still get in. Yeah. Three games out, and well, Atlanta's won 7 of their last 10. So maybe
I was about to say Atlanta's still stacked, even with
they have Acuna, Riley, I mean, Ozuna's on a, if you look at his numbers, Sale, he's closer to a triple crown than Aaron Judge is, yeah, somehow.
Albies, I think, might be hurt as well.
Yeah,
that's a really.
Have 3 or 4 big time players out for a while. Spencer Strider's out for the season.
Yeah. Max Fried will be a guy we could look at this winter, but.
And that's another guy we'll drool over and not spend money for.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we'll wrap on that. We'll early week crew will be back to cover the Tiger series, and this crew will be back next week, I think on Wednesday, to recap the Met series. Everyone have a great weekend. Take care.